Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're digging into your sources again today, pulling out those key nuggets. And today we're embarking on, well, I think it's a really fascinating journey, exploring a topic that can sometimes feel a bit distant.
Right. Abstract, maybe?
Exactly. But the sources show it as incredibly active, deeply intertwined with our world. We're looking at the role of angels, but not just as, abstract figures, more like active participants in what these sources call the story of redemption, the connection between heaven and earth.
That's right. And our mission here for this deep dive is really to get a handle on the profound and very active involvement of these heavenly beings and, crucially, Christ
Okay.
in bridging what's described as this gap, this fundamental separation between divinity and humanity.
Right.
These sources, they really light up a pathway, you could say, to personal connection, even transformation. They challenge you to see the spiritual realm as, well, intensely practical, present.
Okay, let's unpack this then. The sources jump right in, setting a pretty powerful scene. Humanity was, in a sense, cut off from God, sin, they call it.
Separation, yeah, that's the core idea.
But then, almost immediately, a bridge gets built. And it's illustrated beautifully through a really classic story.
And what's fascinating here is the figure they use, Jacob's dream.
After the whole thing with Esau.
Exactly, right after deceiving Esau. He's weighed down with guilt, feeling totally forsaken by heaven, utterly alone. And in that state, he dreams of this vast sort of shadowy ladder reaching way up to heaven, and angels of God are passing up and down on it. And from the top, a divine voice offers comfort, hope. And the sources are clear. This mystic ladder, as they put it, represented Jesus, the only medium of communication between God and man.
So that ladder is the brig.
It's the bridge, yeah. A powerful metaphor for that connection.
And here's where it gets, for me, really interesting. This wasn't just a personal vision for Jacob. The sources, they connected directly to Christ's ultimate sacrifice.
They absolutely do.
They state God permitted him to leave the bosom of his love, the adoration of the angels, to suffer shame, insult, humiliation, hatred, and death.
It's quite starkly put.
It really is. And in doing that, God essentially poured out to us all heaven in one gift by giving up his son. That's a staggering thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And the implication, according to these sources, is immense. Through Christ, through that sacrifice, earth is again linked with heaven. He bridged that gulf, the chasm sin had made, which then allows, and this is crucial, ministering angels can hold communion with man.
So the bridge enables the angelic interaction.
Precisely. It connects a fallen man in his weakness and helplessness with the source of infinite power. It's described as a complete enlistment, really.
Enlistment? How so?
Well, listen to this. The Savior's life and death and intercession, the ministry of angels, the pleading of the Spirit, the Father working above and through all, the unceasing interest of heavenly beings, all are enlisted in behalf of man's redemption.
Wow. So it's not just one act, it's everything, everyone.
A complete unified effort, a vast active network, as you said.
Okay, so it's this incredibly comprehensive divine engagement. Let's zoom in on the angels themselves within that network. What are they actually doing? Are they just messengers? Or is it deeper?
It seems much deeper. Based on these sources, their role is far from passive. They're seen ascending and descending upon the Son of Man.
That's the phrase Christ used with Nathaniel, right?
Exactly. And the sources suggest this isn't just symbolic imagery. It highlights their ongoing active role. They describe these ministering angels who hold communion with man, enabled by Christ. And importantly, they're ever engaged in working for the happiness of others. This is their joy.
Their joy. So it's not just a duty.
Apparently not. It implies this deep inherent motivation, a desire to serve.
And this service, it isn't just about big splashy miracles or announcements.
No, not at all. The sources make a point of saying angels were with Jesus even when he walked side by side with peasants and laborers, unrecognized and unhonored.
So in the mundane moments too.
Right. In fact, they say the most exalted of the angel throng, the highest angels, were the ones who had come to the tomb at Christ's resurrection, and they had been with him throughout his life on earth.
That really speaks volumes about their commitment, doesn't it? A constant unseen presence.
It does. It suggests this divine engagement isn't just for show. It's pervasive, unseen support, even in the humblest situations.
If we connect this back to the bigger picture, it's quite quite remarkable. God could have just used angels for everything, right?
That's exactly what the sources highlight. He might have committed the message of the gospel and all the work of loving ministry to the heavenly angels.
But he didn't.
No.
Yeah.
Instead, he chose to make us co-workers with himself, with Christ and the angel.
Co-workers? Us?
Yeah. Allowing humanity to share in the blessing, the joy of this selfless ministry.
That's quite a thought. Sharing in their work.
And what's also fascinating is that this whole theme of redemption, it isn't just a human story. It's described as one that the angels desire to look into.
They desire to look into it.
Yes. Like, it's a subject of intense interest for them. It will be the science and the song of the redeemed throughout the ceaseless ages of eternity.
Wow. So it's a cosmic drama they're deeply invested in,
right,
learning alongside us.
Exactly. They're not detached observers. They're participants learning and rejoicing.
Okay, but this isn't just theology or ancient history, is it? The sources seem to bring it right down to earth, right down to you, the listener.
They definitely do.
What does all this divine engagement actually mean for your life? Like, right now? It's presented as deeply personal, impacting daily existence.
And that brings up a really pointed question the sources ask. Why do so many people, thousands they say, fail to really believe that Jesus pardons them?
Personally, individually.
Yes, personal, individually. The texts strongly affirm that it is the privilege of all who comply with the conditions to know for themselves that pardon is freely extended for every sin.
A privilege to know it.
Right. It emphasizes that strength and grace have been provided through Christ to be brought by ministering angels to every believing soul.
Brought by angels.
That's the phrasing. And they add, none are so sinful that they cannot find strength, purity, and righteousness in Jesus who died for them. It's a direct promise, accessible to everyone.
And another crucial point seems to be prayer. The power of prayer.
Huge emphasis on that.
Boom.
They highlight that angel, well, they love to bow before God. They love to be near him. They regard communion with God as their highest joy.
Their highest joy. Okay.
But then the sources pose this really challenging question. What can these angels possibly think of poor, helpless human beings when God's heart of infinite love yearns toward them, and yet they pray so little and have so little faith?
Oof. That's quite direct. A call to reflect, really.
It is. It prompts you to think about your own spiritual practices. But there's encouragement, too. They note that angels from the world of light will be with those who, in humility of heart, seek for divine guidance through prayer and Bible study.
So seeking guidance attracts their presence. It's a two-way street.
Seems so. And it's not just our prayers, but our words, too. They have an impact.
Our everyday words.
Yeah. The sources actually warn that every word of doubt you utter is inviting Satan's temptations. It is strengthening in you the tendency to doubt, and it is grieving from you the ministering angels.
Grieving the angels, wow.
Conversely, angels are listening to hear what kind of report you are bearing to the world about your heavenly master.
So they're listening to how we talk about our faith, our experience.
It really highlights this direct daily interaction with the unseen realm. Our words, our attitudes, they matter in this context.
And ultimately, what's the promise?
The ultimate promise is transformation, that redeemed souls cleansed from sin will eventually share the dignity and the privileges of the angels.
Share their dignity and privileges.
Yeah. And that even now, there is joy in heaven in the presence of God and the holy angels over one soul redeemed, one single soul.
What an incredible deep dive, really exploring these active, tireless efforts of, well, Christ and heavenly beings on our behalf as these sources see it.
Mm-hmm.
It paints a picture of connection, redemption, personal transformation that feels much more intimate, much more immediate than maybe we often realize.
Absolutely. So here's something to think about, maybe mull over. If angels themselves desire to look into this whole theme of redemption,
well,
because
yeah,
it's going to be their science and song for eternity, and if they see communion with God as their highest joy,
yeah,
what hidden depths of joy, what understanding might you be missing out on by not fully engaging with this very real, very active connection that heaven, according to these sources, is constantly extending toward you?
If you enjoyed this study and would like to learn more, please go to revelationwithdaniel.com. and search for Angels Studies. You will find a growing list of this type of podcasts.